Podcasting Network, where you can vote. Good evening from Boston, Massachusetts. My name is Frank Allen. Tonight, Marilyn and I will discuss human slavery on TM Radio. It is very prevalent today in foreign countries, and it seems that the slaves are going to Kuwait, where all the money is. Okay, Marilyn, if you're right here, let's begin, since we don't have too much time.
Okay.
And you need some more bass, too.
All right. How's that?
Mike will do it for you. Okay. So Janet's going to take the first 20 minutes, and then we'll be on for the rest of the show.
Okay.
And you and I can both comment and go back and forth with Janet. Go ahead, Janet.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Oh, very good. Great to hear from you.
Yep. Thanks for accommodating me and having me back on. So I was on earlier this week talking about the call-out for some, we were talking about the call-out for submissions from the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Torture concerning what he's calling both psychological abuse and torture and no-touch torture, which are actually, there's some ambiguity with those terms, which we discussed. And I decided to look into a little further the status of torture in the United States. And I found out some very interesting things, which I think should really rivet your audience and might even, you know, compel them to go ahead and submit these declarations that we were talking about to be forwarded on to the Special Rapporteur on Torture. In fact, our domestic laws on torture do not cover in any way the crime of torture within the borders of the United States. The sole U.S. code governing torture defines it as an offense committed outside the borders of the United States. Now, that is simply shocking, because what that does, in a sense, is negate or deny the fact that torture can be committed by public officials in the U.S. and actually is being committed. So I'm just going to read here. This is the offense of Title 18, Section 2340, offense. Whoever outside the United States commits or attempts to commit torture shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years, and it goes on. Well, that's outside, okay? And I have searched and searched, and I have actually communicated with people far more expert in the law than I, and that's it. That's the offense, torturing outside the United States, which de facto decriminalizes torture within the United States. Now, it gets worse. There are a number of organizations, agencies inside the United States, which have dedicated themselves to helping torture survivors. You know, really wonderful, because people who are tortured can develop, you know, emotional problems. They can have physical problems, and it's wonderful that these organizations exist to help people. However, They will not help American-born citizens who are stating they've been tortured. These organizations are set up almost exclusively for refugees and asylum seekers. If you're tortured in the third world, come to America, you'll get help. If you're tortured in America, if you're from America, you get tortured in America, you don't get help. And I've spoken.
I agree with that, like 2,000%. And seems to be the norm.
Well, it's not only, you know, it's been our experience, but having spoken with the executive directors now of a number of these agencies, they're explaining to me they get funding through Health and Human Services and through a specific office in Health and Human Services, which is dedicated to refugee resettlement. That's where the money comes from. And the money is for refugees and asylum seekers. So that's it. So their funding prohibits them from helping American citizens. In fact, this is where it gets really sort of so disturbing. I spoke with the executive director of a well-known torture assistance rehabilitation agency. It's called TASSC. Now, this was initially founded by an American citizen, a nun named Deanna Ortiz, who ended up being tortured in a third world country by the CIA. And she wanted to make sure that if this happened to anybody else, that they could get help. So initially, TASSC was set up to help torture victims. But when the funding came in, and the funding came in from HHS, the funding restricts them from helping U.S.-born citizens. Deanna Ortiz having set up... Are you there, Frank?
Yes, I am.
Hello?
I was just making...
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, Deanna Ortiz having, you know, founded this organization... She is no longer in a position of authority on the board of TASSC, but I imagine that she's not probably too happy about what's happened. There's another funding. I haven't spoken to her, but I can't imagine having gone through what she went through, and then set up this, you know, this agency to make sure that people could get help, and then to find out that, you know, her paisanos, you know, her people from the same country she's from who get tortured can't get help. So there is another funding stream that comes from the United Nations called, I think, the Voluntary Fund for Torture Victims. And I have looked into that fund. It does not appear to restrict its funding. However, I have been told by some of these directors of these agencies that their funding from the United Nations is also restricted. I have not been able to find yet in writing, you know, where that has taken place. But those are the two funding streams. So this is what happens. You know, torture gets defined as something that doesn't happen in the U.S. And then, you know, Health and Human Services donates, you know, through grants, all this money to make sure that the only recipients of these funds are people seeking asylum or refuge in the United States. Now, there was one organization I found, and so far this is the only one I have found, and it is in Chicago, and it got set up after there was a big scandal there. A police officer, maybe more than one, was found to have been torturing black people in order to get false confessions from them. Some of these people ended up not only in prison but on death row, and then it was uncovered that his name was John Burge. He had been torturing people in order to get confessions. So subsequent to this scandal, this Chicago Police Brutality Justice Agency was set up to help people who'd been tortured, and they are clearly helping Chicagoans who have been tortured by the police. But I can find no other organization that is helping American citizens who have experienced
torture. I just wanted to let you know that we are having workshops every day at 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. And the turnout today wasn't very good. We had 4 people, and it was really disheartening. But I hope tomorrow is better. I'm going to send out text messages, automated text messages, so we can possibly get something going in there. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. I think it's great that you're doing that. And I want to reiterate that this request for submissions by the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Torture has given us the opportunity to make our voices heard. And I think it's extremely important, given all of this nonsense, you know, that there are no laws, federal laws prohibiting torture, you know, by local authorities, by U.S. authorities, okay? It can only happen outside the country. You can only get help if you're, you know, if you are a foreign-born person. I mean, with all this nonsense, I think it is incredibly important that we take advantage of this opportunity and let the international community know through these submissions that torture is alive and kicking in the United States of America. Now, you know, there are a lot of people who say, oh, well, the UN, you know, you can't trust the UN. And you know something? That may be true. But the fact is, we've been given a voice here. We've been given the opportunity to be heard. And I think it's extremely important that we use this opportunity, because if we don't, you know, the torturers will go on their merry way saying it only happens in Latin America, it only happens in Africa. We're just fine and dandy here in the U.S., and we need to let the international community know that that is not true.
Yes.
So I think it's wonderful what you're doing, and I really hope that people listening will join in to this workshop that you're doing tomorrow, and that, you know, we will get a whole bunch of declarations into the United Nations. It's incredibly important, I think.
Okay, TIs have to understand that this is probably the most important thing that we do this year, or the most important document that we fill out, possibly to date, because this document, it carries a lot of weight. And some people do not trust the United Nations. That's fine. But this will be on the books of the United Nations, and it will go into the handbook, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, Janet. And this handbook is the book of law. And this is something that we can use in a court of law, whether it doesn't matter to anyone. And I don't believe they will bar something from the UN, do you?
We have to get these submitted. And when they're submitted, you should have a confirmation of receipt. It's very important. And once these are submitted, there's more that we can do to make sure that appropriate pressure is put on the Special Rapporteur for Torture. for example, you know, these declarations, we can write about them. We can talk about them on many video shows. We can make sure that people are educated to the fact that torture is going on in the United States, and that now the United Nations has asked for information, and they've gotten it. Now, you know, we can use this to continue to put pressure on the situation, and I think it's very, very important that we do so, and I think it's wonderful, Frank, that you are, you know, you have committed yourself to helping people do the declarations, do the workshops, and get these in.
Yes, they are most important. As I say, this is probably the most important document that you will fill out to date. So please don't lose this opportunity. It's going to come probably once. Would you say, Janet?
Oh, I never make predictions about the future.
Okay.
I am amazed. I am amazed that it's happened at all. And I'm thrilled. And I am thrilled that you and the Targeted Justice have picked up on this and are doing what you can to make sure that these declarations get in.
Okay. Well, we'll have a workshop tomorrow, Sunday, and by Sunday evening at 9, actually, the 25th is Monday. By Monday evening at 9 o'clock, I would like to see all of them in, because it has to be emailed before midnight on the 25th.
And remember, please, that the time is different in Europe. You know, they're on European time, right? So make sure that you get it in under the line on European time. Okay?
Okay, European time. They can be 6 hours away, 6 hours out.
Yeah, I would get these in early on the 25th. I would get them in, you know, early.
Okay.
Just to make sure. Okay, I want to thank you very much for, you know, having me back on to discuss this. And Godspeed with all this, Frank.
Oh, thank you so much for coming back, Janet. And
thank you, Frankie.
And we'll talk to you later.
Okay, good night.
Good night. Okay, Marilyn, are you hanging in there?
Yeah, as a torture victim, I am doing my best. I wanted to ask about the affidavit. You had mentioned to attach an affidavit. I wanted to thank her. Thank you so much for that clarity. And that'll be something to research to better understand that. We don't have the protection that other countries have. Now, do we need an affidavit to attach to this questionnaire?
Yeah. This is where I'm lost, and it's a question I wanted to ask Janet, and that is it necessary to have an affidavit in there when you can actually just fill out your questionnaire? But an affidavit is actually you, the person, the minute you sign it. But it's not notarized, so the affidavit isn't actually legal? At least it wouldn't be in the U.S.
Okay.
Okay, well, let's move. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so just real quick, I wanted to say that that long-term psychological problems are the result of torture, trauma, anxiety, depression, and psychopathic issues. And also, your brain tissue will be destroyed if it's long-term torture, which is you can't repair that tissue damage. So the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex, targeted individual will have this problem as it, you have years of torture. So I just wanted to mention that.
Now,
take care of your brains.
You mentioned that you have an issue with your brain. Can you, would you like to share what that is?
Yes. I'll try to say it really quick. So, as 20 years, I feel like a war veteran. The torture is ongoing, and it's a brain war. And many people have brought up Hyper James theory. This is the first time where I've basically said in 20 years that it's just straight torture. It's 24 hours a day. My brain expands, and it presses up against my skull. It deflates. It shrinks. I can almost sense water evaporating, which could be the microwave technology. The trauma, my memory loss, the inability to think and concentrate. I'm pressured to do interrogation while I'm sleeping and then told to forget the interrogation. And I'm often threatened my mother's life. I've been told by a perp named Virgil, if he gets caught, he's going to kill my mother. So I have to... this is an extreme TI case, I think. The hive is basically trying to destroy my brain. And as a creative person, an artist, and an empath, it's quite disappointing. And the only thing I can think of that to make sense of it is that, you know, I'm not the only person on the planet. I'll just expose it. Someone's having a good life. It's unfortunate I'm not that person, but I'm going to participate in this questionnaire. And it takes an incredible amount of concentration to do any task now, especially this year. And I'm also being shot in the legs and the feet, you know, issues with that. My breath is stopped. My lungs get shut down. My vision will force my vision to be blurry. Constant coughing, upper respiratory problems. It's a long list of torture, so I'm hopefully the United Nations will listen to us and help us. And just for TIs, I've sent emails to them several times in different periods of my targeting.
Well, thank you very much for sharing. And 20 years is a long time for R&M. It's a very long time, and cut Marilyn all the slack that you can, because she is going through hell with actually 20 hive mind people. These 20 people are part of the hive, and they're trying to make her part of it, and she is kicking some butt, and she's just not hearing about it. So give her all the support you can.
Thank you, Frank.
Oh, no problem. I'd just like to mention a really stellar group, and that is Targeted Justice. And you can join Targeted Justice simply by going to their website, and at the very top, you'll see Home. Click on that. And it'll say join Targeted Justice, I believe, the second one down. And it's a great organization, great people, and I can't think of a better place for you to go. But you can come to our place, too. Thank you so much. And our topic tonight is actually a re-emerging disgrace that's starting to evolve around the world today, and that's human slavery. Women are being offered for sale in Kuwait. Facebook, Google, and Apple were making available apps that lead to the sale of women, and the hashtag is Maids for Transfer. And I'll let Marilyn take over, and we also may get into slavery in the United States. which Marilyn already knows a ton about. Go ahead.
So I had really heard that, you know, gang stalking was human trafficking, and so they're buying and selling us, and they're profiting off of our torture. And I wanted to know if Facebook was, in fact, it's used as a platform to expose contract stalking and human trafficking and all kinds of, like, activism globally. But unfortunately, it must also be used for the perpetrators of gang stalking, that they might be dumb enough to imagine that they're normal.
Individuals today are sold, they are locked in a house, the windows are locked, they get no telephone, so their maid job turns into a slave job. There are so many individuals involved in the slave trade that it will take months and months to unravel this serious crime in Kuwait. Officials in Kuwait are investigating a 16-year-old girl from Guyana. Her name for the present time is Fatou. Police are also involved, as one officer is featured in the report and is under investigation by authorities. So, once again, I will draw a parallel to over 100 years ago. Only 100 years ago, the police wouldn't come to your aid and support your case, or you wouldn't get retribution for the amount of time that you had spent in slavery. You would just go from day to day to day. And that's all it would be. An international attorney, Kimberly Motley, has taken Fatou's case. She believes that people who are making the money from these apps should be held responsible, paying restitution to Fatou. There will be also an investigation into the trafficking of Fatou from Guyana to Kuwait. So we have people on both ends that are guilty. And I think you're going to find in Kuwait, this goes very high up. That is being overstated, and that's an opinion, so you can't take that as fact. The BBC reported that slaves were being sold on the black market. This probe uncovered an unraveled black market for slaves. Most workers were bought and sold as a commodity. Listings for the slave trade were listed on Google Play and the Apple Store. Can you imagine that? You get this app off the Apple Store. And it was, actually the name of it was the number 4 sale. And the people would communicate privately. And they would make a deal using one of Apple's apps or an Android app. But in the wake of this incident, Google has decided to donate $11.5 million to help stamp out the fire of slavery. We don't want to see this again. And we already have human trafficking in the United States, and someone is looking the other way because it's allowed to continue. It's allowed to continue because somebody doesn't care. Now, I'm going to parallel this again, only I'm going to parallel it to Canada. Kevin Annett has spent 25 years fighting because there are mass graves with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of natives, Native Canadians. So we don't want to see that happen in this country. I think this country's seen enough slavery. Google is also removing 703 accounts related to the black market sale. Okay, I've got a caller, Richard from North Carolina. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to make a comment about the slavery and the other things that are going on pertaining to the other countries going through the disasters that they're going through. And, well, I hope you guys don't mind a little criticism, but...
That's fine,
sir. The UN is able and connected to all the other countries in the world already. They could be doing something about the targeting there. They could be doing something about the trafficking there. They're interested in coming into America and using the Geneva Convention to do so is a little strange to me, but I would like to say that Paul Revere, while riding the coastline with his lantern, had he stopped and got off of the horse and met with some of the gentlemen of the boats and said, hey, I don't really like the way these guys are treating me. Y'all can make a deal with me, and I'll go tell the rest, so maybe we can have some change. And perhaps they would call that treason to coerce with the enemy. And the thing is, well, we've got our problems in America, and we need and have needed for such a long, long time to straighten those problems out, to invite all the other people into the country to do that for us. May be disaster. I mean, we might as well invite Putin or the leaders of China. Well, in fact, we are. If we invite the UN, we would be inviting each and every leader of each and every other nation. And that's what I wanted to say.
Well, thank you, Richard. I just wanted to let you know that the UN is actually involved already in this human trafficking in Kuwait. And they have rapporteurs or reporters for every aspect of the UN. And they also have one for human trafficking. And they're right on the case. And the reason this questionnaire is so important is because it's a foot in the door. It will get our problems on their books. Therefore, it is proven once and for all that targeting is not the Tin Hat Club, but something that is very, very real. But thank you, Richard. And Instagram is actually working with Polaris and the National Human Trafficking Hotline to provide resources and assist survivors. This is another shot heard around the world as countries learn about the Persian Gulf slavery. The For Sale app boasts over 1.4 active clients or users, along with 10.8 million total ads on their website. for sale has refused to comment on the amount of slave trade flowing through their app. In other words, they know about it. Okay, so why didn't they do something about it? No answers. Nothing. So, I think that it's fair to say that we should boycott this for sale app, and it's a number four sale, S-A-L-E. So I think it's time to boycott this app. And I don't care if I get sued or what, because this is BS, and it's time for it to stop. Apple claims no responsibility for the apps on sale in the App Store. And these are third-party apps for the most part. Apple used to be very pure about the App Store. So I imagine it cost a lot of money to have your app sold there. I have had problems myself with the App Store, trying to return apps that I did not purchase or apps that didn't work. So try and stay away from third-party apps? Well, you can't. It's almost impossible. And a lot of them do not work. I paid, I think, $10 for one app, and it did not work. It took me 60 days to finally convince them to return my $10. So most of the apps are third party, for sale, and Haji are available. But after this, would you use them? I'm going to say no. Okay, I'm going to go back, way back, to the 1800s, buying and selling slaves. Before the Civil War, nearly 4 million black slaves toiled in the American South. Modern scholars have assembled a great deal of evidence showing that few slaves accepted their lack of freedom or enjoyed life on the plantation. As one ex-slave put it, no day dawns for the slave, nor is it looked for. It is all night. Night forever. For many, the long night of slavery only ends in death. In 1841, a bounty hunter kidnapped Solomon Northrop, a free black man from Saratoga, New York, on the pretext that he was a runaway slave from Georgia. When the bounty hunter sold him into slavery, Northrop lost his family, his home, his freedom, and even his name. Now, this is beginning to resemble something else. All of the targeted community has lost their homes. They've lost contact with friends and family. Some have lost the desire to even get out of bed every day, because the day is the same as a slave. Every day is the same. You wake up and they're there. Remote neural monitoring / V2K / synthetic telepathy. It's slavery. The only difference is there's no cage and no shackles. So Solomon Northrop was taken to New Orleans, Louisiana, where he was put into a slave pen with other men, women, and children waiting to be sold. In 12 years, a slave, a narrative that Northrop wrote after he regained his freedom, the citizen of New York described what it was like to be treated as human property. Freemen, the wild slave broker, would make us hold up our heads, walk briskly back and forth, while customers would feel of our heads and arms and bodies, turn us about, ask us what we could do, make us open our mouths and show our teeth. Sometimes a man or woman was taken back to the small house in the yard, stripped and inspected more minutely. Scars upon a slave's back were considered evidence of a rebellious or unruly spirit, and this would hamper his sale. By law, slaves were the personal property of their owners in all southern states except Louisiana. The slave master held absolute authority over his human property. As the Louisiana law made clear, the master may sell him, dispose of his person, his industry, and his labor. The slave can do nothing, possess nothing, nor acquire anything but what must belong to his master. Slaves had no constitutional rights. They could not testify in a court of law against a white person. They could not leave the plantation without permission. Slaves often found themselves rented out. Used as prizes in lotteries or as wagers in card games and horse races. Separation from family and friends was probably the greatest fear a black person in slavery faced. When a master died, his slaves were often sold for the benefit of his heirs. Solomon Northrop himself witnessed a sorrowful separation in the New Orleans slave pen when a slave buyer purchased a mother, but not her little girl. Okay, Marilyn, are you with us?
Hi, yeah, I got cut off. You're doing an excellent job. This is a great show.
Yeah, it is. It's actually, it's history, and it's sorrowful history, but it is history just the same. It's an eye opener, and I mm-hmm. hope that people see it that way. You want to take over for a couple?
Okay, comment? I just wanted to add that a BBC article. Someone was doing a investigation. A UN special rapporteur exposed it. So the BBC Arabic undercover team spoke to 57 app users and visited more than a dozen people who were trying to sell them their domestic worker via a popular commodity app called For Sale. The sellers almost all advocated confiscating the women's passports, confining them to the house, denying them any time off, and giving them little or no access to a phone. The For Sale app allowed you to filter by race with different price brackets clearly on offer according to category, and quoted
Okay. Yeah, I think so too. I think I will continue until you get her back on. The child, sensible of some impending danger, instinctively fastened her hands around her mother's neck and nestled her little head upon her bosom. Freeman, the slave broker, sternly ordered the mother to be quiet. But she did not heed him. He caught her by the arm and pulled her rudely, but she clung closer to the child. Then with a volley of great oaths, he struck her such a heartless blow that she staggered backward and was like to fall. Oh, how piteously then did she beseech and beg and pray that they not be separated. Perhaps out of pity, the buyer did offer to purchase the little girl, but the slave broker refused, saying there would be piles of money to be made of her when she got older. Slave labor. Of all the crops grown in the South before the Civil War, including sugar, rice, and corn, cotton was the chief moneymaker. Millions of acres had been turned to cotton production following the invention of the cotton gin in 1793. As more and more cotton lands came under cultivation, especially in Mississippi and Texas, the demand for slaves boomed. By 1860, a mature male slave would cost between $1,000 and $2,000. A mature female would sell for a few hundred less. Slaves worked all sorts of jobs throughout the slaveholding South, but the majority were field hands or relatively large plantations. Men, women, and children served as field hands. The owner decided when slave children would go into the fields, usually between the ages of 10 and 12. The cotton picking season beginning in August was a time of hard work and fear among the slaves. In his book, Solomon Northrop described picking cotton on a plantation along the Red River in Louisiana. And I think I'm going to take this opportunity to close, because this is really a trip going back into history. But they had to live it. I'm just reading about it. But to prevent this, fortunately today, slavery is recognized much differently. And we will not ever let this happen again. And I'd like to thank all of the ancestors who are listening. And I'd like to thank Marilyn and Richard. God bless. Good night from Boston, Massachusetts. My name is Frank Allen. Hey, have a good night. Oh, that's okay. No problem. That's all right. Come on, man.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN.